You are listening to the Hiking Radio Network, where we talk the walk with shows by hikers about hikers for everybody.
The Hiking Radio Network? If you haven't checked it out yet, it's time that you do. You will find links to the other shows in my show notes as well, but you got to go check them out. Mighty Blue on the Appalachian Trail, the ultimate midlife crisis. That's Steve Adams, and he has literally hundreds of episodes for you to binge. He talks to hikers who have thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail, among other things. Check out Jester's Section Hiker podcast. She talks to hikers that are out there taking on these long trails just one section at a time. And go dance upon the earth with Anna Mudbutt on the Trail Dames podcast. I've had the honor of being on her podcast and vice versa. And stay tuned for new shows that we're going to be adding to the network soon.
Guess what? We have a Hiking Radio Network trading post now. At the trading post, you can find t-shirts and hoodies and coffee cups with your favorite show's logo on it. Yes, you can find some Hiking Unfiltered things there. I'm so excited about that. But you can also find one with Mighty Blue on the Appalachian Trail. You can find just Hiking Radio Network and anything that you buy there on the Hiking Radio Network trading post does go to help support our shows and help us to bring you more content. So thank you in advance for doing some retail therapy. Check it out. There'll be a link for you in the show notes.
Welcome to Hiking Unfiltered, getting real on the trail. I am Courtney, aka Unfiltered, and we're here to explore the trails together. We'll dive into not just the how-to of hiking, but also the why. Welcome.
Hello, welcome to episode 60 of Hiking Unfiltered, Getting Real on the Trail. I am your host, Unfiltered, and today I'm going to be talking to friend of the show, Christine Lady Unicorn Reed. We're going to be talking about her current adventure. But I want to just warn you, I don't know why my settings turned out the way that they did, but my side of this interview sounds very tinny and I can't seem to find a way to adjust that. So I apologize in advance. My voice does not sound super smooth in the interview. It sounds like I'm on the phone, even though I wasn't. At any rate, Christine and I are going to be answering the question today. Why are you going from plodder to fastest known time?
Welcome back to the show.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming again.
Thank you for inviting me.
So I don't know if I told you about this, but you sent me a copy of your book last year, which I absolutely loved reading. I didn't get all the way through it. I was on vacation in July. And at some point, I set the book down and could not find it. And I tore the place apart where we were. We were in a vacation cabin. I'm like, where did this book? Right? I'm looking all over. I'm like, I'm almost done with this book and I'm really enjoying it. And I lost it. I ended up having to buy another copy. So,
oh my gosh.
So I can finish your story. But you had me that hooked. If listeners aren't aware of that book, what's the name of your book?
Alone in Wonderland.
I just really appreciate the way that you bounce back and forth in your writing style there between your memories and processing and then the current time as you were actually out on trail, on the Wonderland Trail. So I think that was a really intelligent way to present your story. So I appreciate it a lot. Tell me about one of the things in the book. You are like a self-proclaimed plotter, and it's two D's, not a T, right? You're not plotting.
No evil schemes.
You're plotting. Yes, you're plotting up mountains. So, but I've been seeing these posts on Instagram lately of you not plotting. So tell me what you're doing right now.
Yeah, I feel very called out. It's true. I talk a lot in the book about being very slow and being self-conscious about how slow I am and kind of struggling finding my body, and just like how challenging I find backpacking to be. And then last year I
had the wild idea to try to set a fastest known time record on a trail in Arkansas where I lived previous to sort of my hiking life beginning. And so I did a lot of training last year. I went out and I made an attempt on the trail. It did not go. didn't go. So I'm trying again this year. And so I have been recently doing a lot of running and a lot of hiking, trying to get faster and get ready to make another attempt.
Okay. So I have to backtrack for a second here because, you know, it seems like the natural place to go from I am struggling at hiking to let me go ahead and set a fastest known time. What happened in between?
A lot of things happened. First, in the fall of 2020, I was diagnosed with POTS, which stands for postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome. And it is a form of dysautonomia, which is also a big word that doesn't mean anything. It's dysfunction of the autonomic nervous system. And the autonomic nervous system controls everything in your body that you're not consciously controlling. So it has a lot to do with heart rate, blood pressure, respiratory rate, sweat production, temperature regulation. It's a lot of things that are just sort of happening behind the scenes. And so when you have a dysfunction of all of those systems, your body kind of just like goes haywire all the time and does things that don't make sense. And so part of that for me is that I have a really, really high heart rate anytime I'm moving, essentially. Not even what you would call exercising so much as just like standing up from a sitting position. My heart rate will go up 40 to 50 beats per minute just from standing. And so part of the reason that I am a plodder and a slow hiker and that my body, it always feels like it's fighting against me, is because it is. And I just didn't know that for my whole life. And so when I wrote Alone in Wonderland, I didn't know that that is why my body is the way it is. And so I got that diagnosis. I actually got the diagnosis a little bit before the book came out, but I had already written in it. And I was like, I'm not going to go try to like shoehorn this in because the reality of the story that happens in Alone in Wonderland, I didn't know that about myself. And so I told the story as it was true at that time. And so since then I've gotten this new piece of information, a new puzzle piece, and it has completely changed my relationship to movement and my relationship to my body. And in some ways given me a level of acceptance to the physical experience that I have on the trail. And in some ways made me want even more to push those lines for myself, like to be able to say, even though I'm dealing with these, you know, objective physical things that I don't really have that much control over, I can still do hard things.
That's really interesting. So now that you have that diagnosis in hand and you understand a little bit more why your body is fighting you when you're trying to do something that's athletic, how exactly, because you said it's changed your relationship to your body and how you view your body. What does that actually look like for you when it's changed? How does that manifest?
I think the biggest way is it really has to do with how I am treating my body. For so long, I had a lot of shame about my body and a lot of shame about my physical abilities. And I was like, oh, I'm just slow. Oh, I'm so sweaty. I always look like I'm struggling, even though I'm like very experienced at this. And now when those things are happening, I know why. And so I don't feel ashamed of them. I'm just like, this is just the body that I have. And I get to focus a lot of that energy instead on how to best take care of my body. So because of my diagnosis, I understand what it needs because there are things people with POTS have to do, like consume a lot of salt and really well manage their hydration and like the fueling that goes along with moving all the time. I understand my body thinks it's sprinting when I'm walking. So I have to consume more fuel than an average person. I have to hydrate better and like be more specific with timing of things going into my body and how I rest and putting my feet up. I'm really prone to like swelling in my lower limbs. So when I break now, I put my feet up And I didn't really do that before. So it's just a lot of little things that instead of just looking at my body and thinking, ugh, why can't you do what I want you to do? I am asking, what can I do to help you, my body, to do the things that I want to do?
That's such a beautiful sentiment. And I can greatly identify with that. We just got home yesterday from a 4-day trip. We were meant to have a little bit more hiking on the 4th day, but frankly, neither one of us could take it. But we were hiking on the Florida Trail, which, and later on, there's going to be a show of our hike on the Florida Trail. I have to kind of, it's like a quilt. It's little bits and pieces that I recorded. So I'm going to have to stitch them together to make it into something that makes sense. But it's something that, it's funny because one of my hiking friends around here who lives in Central Florida, who's given us shuttles a couple of times, his name is Blueberry, said, oh, you guys could do, you know, this route. He's telling me you could go from here to here. I said, well, we're going to be, you know, 4 days. He's like, oh, you could do this. It's only like 57 miles. I'm like, okay. I think you need to be aware that we do not have trail legs at the moment. And our biggest day ever was 10 miles. So I don't know that we can do something like that in 4 days. And he's like, oh no, it's really easy. Cause there's not a lot, you know, there's no elevation really. It's really flat. I'm like, okay, well, we'll see how far we can get. And we got a lot farther than we expected to get. And especially the last day of hiking where we managed to push each other because my husband and I are both really competitive and we've even had arguments about how competitive we are. Like, I'm more competitive than you. Like, that's the kind of conversation that we have pushed each other in that last day to do over 22 miles. And that was a big day. Yeah. It was a big, big deal. Especially since before that, our record was 10. So we doubled and then some. But I had some interesting conversations with my body along the way. And most of the time, I would say I was fairly kind in listening to my body. And sometimes I was like, get off your fat ass and move. So, I don't always speak kindly to my body. I think that's a really interesting interesting message to gently ask, what do you need? How can I support you? Because, you know, I can't do any of this without my body.
And we, in this world, we ask a lot of our bodies. And I implore you and whoever else hears this, just to ask the body back. You know what I mean? Like, say, this is what we're doing. We're doing a 20-mile day today, body. What can I do for you to make that possible? And maybe even pleasant. Like, how can we work together here, you know?
Right. Yeah. So tell me about the kind of schedule that you need to keep in order to keep yourself hydrated. And because one of the things that also in that hydration, you mentioned the salt intake, because I have some issues with that too, where I tend to need more salt than I think I actually need. And it can affect us so quickly when we don't have the electrolytes to actually help us send signals from our brain to other places. You know, it's called electrolytes for a reason. It's helping us actually move electricity through our body. So tell me about what that looks like in your self-care version, supporting your body through that.
Yeah. I will start by saying I heard people talk about electrolytes on the Appalachian Trail, and I was like, I'm not a real athlete. Like, I don't need, that's for like people who are doing like big important things. And so I didn't do electrolytes at all on the AT, and I felt like absolute trash on the Appalachian Trail. I had a horrible UTI that wouldn't go away. I was like dizzy, headaches, nauseous all the time, like all the things that come along with poor hydration. And I just didn't understand why. And it wasn't until many years later that I figured this out. And actually what brought me to salt supplements the first time before I got my diagnosis was I was training for a 50K and I ran my first 18 mile run in Arizona and I felt fine the whole time I was running, got in my car, drove to a Sprouts and I was like, I'm going to get myself a fancy beverage, like, you know, bubbly water or something, kombucha. And I like walked into the Sprouts and I like almost passed out on the floor. And I was like, oh my gosh, that was a really scary experience. And the next day I went to a running store and I said, this is what happened. Like, what's wrong with me? Can you tell me what I'm doing wrong? And they said, are you taking electrolytes? And I was like, what's that? And they gave me a packet of salt stick chewable caplet, chewable thingies. And they were like, just eat these like every 45 minutes to an hour. And I was like, okay. And I did that on my next run. And I was like, oh my God, I've never felt so amazing my whole life. So I was like, I've discovered superhero powers. And so since then, I'm a very dedicated salt stick user. It's my favorite product. They also have a specific thing where they work with people who have dysautonomia. So it's like a fun crossover with their brand. But so when I'm on the trail, it depends what I'm doing and it depends on the weather. And those are things that you just kind of like trial and error figure out. Generally speaking, if I'm running, I am taking salt at least once an hour, sometimes twice. If I'm hiking, usually about once an hour. And you might be able to stretch it out a little more than that if it's like cool and you're not sweating very much and it's kind of cruisy terrain. But like I balance that and then I also will take like Emergency or Effercy, like one of those like drink mix type of things that has some mineral electrolyte things in it. And then like if I'm starting to feel symptomatic, then I'll like quick chug like 8 ounces of water with something like that in it. But I do think that it's one of those things, like the more active you are, the more hiking you do, the more running you do, the more you recognize these patterns in your body and you start to notice what are the symptoms. And then you can really head it off and be a little bit more targeted instead of saying, I take salt every hour. Like I know when I need salt and I take it then. And I do think that requires a few crashes of like totally messing it up. And it's like once you've had the experience of like, I know how bad this can get. And then I drink the electrolytes and I'm like, wow, I feel amazing. And it's amazing to me how quickly getting them in will turn your whole physical experience around. Like it is immediate relief. And so once you've experienced that a few times, you really start to see the signals on the front end. So like, it doesn't get so bad. Right.
You know, we take, electrolyte packets with us on our hike. I have a favorite brand, which I may have a link somewhere that I can put in the show notes that, people can check that out and like, I get some kind of credit for it, free salt or something, but, it's called Element.
Have you used that? Actually, recently I started using that and I do like it.
Yeah. And you can get unflavored, but they have flavors too. I had one flavor that I was like, I really dig this flavor, but I don't want to dig it when it's like 90 degrees out. It was like a hot, like a flavor, like a chili.
They have like a chili like that,
which
one.
Was delicious, but I'm like,
okay.
Yes.
Recently tried that one for the first time. And, you know how when you pour it into your Nalgene, like it gets a little powdery and then I like went to drink it and I like inhaled chili. And I was like, why would they make this flavor? It does taste really good, but don't inhale it by accident.
Well, my husband and I were joking about how like maybe at some point we needed to just open these things up and like take them like pixie sticks, just like tumbled back.
That's why I like the chewables.
We were getting so dehydrated. Yeah, I've never heard of the chewables, but I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's a great product.
Yeah, because the thing for us, like too, with the Element packets, they're super lightweight. It's not like they take up a lot of space in your pack and that type of thing. But it does. It makes it even if you're drinking a lot of water, you can actually drink too much water if you don't have electrolytes in it, because then you're actually washing out the things that you think that you're trying to get when you're drinking the water.
Yep.
So,
The tricky thing is when I took a Woofer certification, gosh, years ago now, but they talked about hypernatremia, which is when you are overhydrated and under mineral. And the only difference symptomatically between being overhydrated and underhydrated, like you still get a headache, you still get nauseous, like all the symptoms are exactly the same. The only difference is how much water have you drank? So that can be tricky too, because you can think, wow, I don't feel good, I'm dehydrated, and you're just like chugging water when what you really need to be doing is eating salt.
Right. Yeah. So you're going for fastest known time on a trail that's near your childhood-ish home? Is that the idea?
Yeah, it's where I went to college in Little Rock, Arkansas. Oh, okay. So the trail ends at Pinnacle Mountain State Park, which is a place that I have a sordid history with in terms of it's where I did some of my first hiking, and it's where I first learned to absolutely hate hiking as an experience. And that's where the trail ends. So I'm sort of like walking to that place, coming home.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is this going to be the first time really that you're going back and like revisiting that spot?
No, so my dad still lives in Arkansas. And so I visit him once or twice a year out there, and I go hike Pinnacle Mountain pretty much every time I go home. As a checkpoint sort of, you know, to like revisit those memories, and also to like make new, better memories.
Right.
Yeah.
Almost like trauma healing.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely an aspect of like wanting to rewrite that story for myself about who I am and who I can be in this place.
So if you get to that point and you actually can claim that fastest known time, what happens if you actually claim that? Like, what happens after? Or is right now that such a big piece of like, I have to have this, that you haven't thought about what happens after you have that title?
I have thought about it a little bit, because I look around at other people who are competing in the fastest known time world, and who are like kind of taking these big adventure like attempts and sometimes failures and sometimes successes, and how they're talking about them afterwards, and also just thinking about like, okay, this is a goal I've had now for over a year, and I went and I attempted and I failed and I'm trying again, so now this is something I've been like working on for a while. And so I think it is important when you're doing something really big to think about like what is going to happen after, otherwise you sort of fall off this cliff of like, oh shit, I've just been working on the same thing for so long and now it's over.
I finally crossed the finish line and now what?
Have thought about it, and thought about like, you know, is the fastest known time world something I want to continue to like try to exist in? Or how can this attempt inform my future goals? And I don't know, it's complicated. I wouldn't say I have an answer to that. I'm really interested in several long runs, ultra running races. Not to attempt to win any of them, but just to run them. There's some courses I'm interested in. So I might kind of like lean in that direction afterwards. I also, you know, my friend I hiked part of the Colorado Trail with called me today and was like, hey, want to do a through hike next year? And I'm like, I don't know, we'll see. So like maybe another through hike at a normal pace could be fun.
Right.
I don't know if I'm ready to like really go mentally to like what is the next thing yet, but I have definitely thought about making sure that I think about that before it's time.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that happened in this last few days on this trip, that Travis and I both, a conclusion that we both came to, was that we need to have something almost like, I hate to call it on the books, but that's kind of what it needs to be. Like, we need to know what the next thing is when we go out on these trips. Because if we don't have a next thing, we really do start to, it's like the color starts to drain out of you. Like, that you just start to fade to black and white, and you go back to the matrix and you get sucked in. And then before you know it, it's like, oh my gosh, I haven't gone for a hike in 6 months. Like, what? But I love it so much. Why am I not doing this? And every time we go out, we go, why are we not doing this? You know, we just enjoy it so much most of the time, unless I'm being a slave driver and trying to get 22 miles.
Well, and I think too, like, once you get into like the, not even competitive, but just like pushing yourself experience, it can really start to feel like everything you do has to be bigger than the last thing. And that is a scary place to be when you get to the point where you're like giving everything you have. Like, this FKT attempt is going to be everything I have. And the thought that I'm going to come off of that and think, what's the next bigger thing than this, is like, I need to reconcile that in my brain before the moment comes and I'm like, got some new crackpot scheme. You know, and I don't even know. I can't even fathom like what the next thing would be that I would be bigger than that. But because that feels like such a limit to me. But I think truly when you start to think of yourself as an athlete and you start to push your boundaries, like truly push them, anytime you accomplish something, you think, well, I must be able to go bigger or I wouldn't have been able to do this. Like, if I can do this, it's possible to go bigger. It's a slippery slope.
Such a universal human condition. It really is. It is a slippery slope. I find myself doing that in so many categories. It's kind of like how the phrase, right? If the way that you do one thing is the way that you do all things. And so I can get that way about so many things. You know, I can get that way about hiking. I can get that way about being competitive in my career. I can get that way about, so many things. I can't think of a whole lot at the moment for some reason. Maybe I need more hydration. But,
Well, and it's important too to think about like, why are you hiking? What are you trying to get out of this experience? Yeah. And like, for me, there has always been an element of pushing myself involved. And when I started, I was not athletic. I had never hiked. I didn't have any experience. My body didn't know what was happening. Like, for me, getting on the Appalachian Trail and hiking a 7 mile day was really pushing myself. And, you know, so like that was always part of the experience, but there were other things I was getting out of it. And there were other things I was trying, you know, I was interested in being part of the hiking community, part of the outdoor community. And I was interested in self-exploration on other levels than physical. And, you know, so there was layers when I began this journey of things that I was interested in getting out of the experience. And I think that it can be really easy to get tunnel vision and go like, I'm really into this pushing myself physically thing and forget about the other aspects. And so that's something I also want to remind myself, because on the Ouachita Trail, when I make this attempt, there isn't going to be a whole lot of those, like, I'm just out here to enjoy nature and like, like connect to the earth. Like a little bit, but it's going to be very focused on the, like, I am pushing myself physically. And so, you know, maybe my next thing after that will be something a little more focused in one of those other directions.
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing to remember too, because it is so easy when you are pushing to like, you're just looking down at your feet, you know, like, where is the next step going to go? Where's the step after that going to go? And looking up occasionally to make sure you're, you know, still on trail and you're still at blazes and things like that. But it can be so, so easy when you're in that mode to not notice the nature around you, which to me, I did catch myself a couple of times like that on Saturday when I was pushing really hard. It was like, you know, the whole point of being out here was not for me to be a badass. Well, maybe a little. But the whole point was I need to unplug and I need to reset and I need to be in the, like, for me, I need trees. Yeah. I need trees. So it is a very interesting observation, that idea of, like, okay, now that you've gone in this direction so hard, maybe swinging back in the other direction and finding that pendulum swing to where you get to that center point. It's not, the swing isn't so hard in either direction.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I have been the backpacker seeing the trail runner and going, are they even enjoying this?
I saw someone on the weekend too, like, they ran past with this little tiny, like, water pack. They ran past. I'm like, well, yeah, I could do that too if that was the only thing on my back.
Yes. And so I've been on both sides of that, right? Like, I've been the backpacker looking at the trail runner going, like, you know, scoffing or whatever, being like, they're not enjoying the nature. And I've been the trail runner. And I will say, I really enjoy the nature when I'm running. Like, I do stop and, like, look at the vista and go, like, this is amazing. And I'm in it. And I'm so physically in my body right now while I'm in it. And it's just a different type of experience. And I think both of them have so much value. And honestly, I would really encourage hikers to, like, just run a little, just, like, do that, because it's such a fun, like, childlike joy kind of experience. Like, when I'm running downhill on a grade that's, like, really cruisy, like, a lot of times I'll go, wee, while I'm running, because it's just so fun. And right. I definitely took that for granted before I had the experience. And now I'm, you know, I've been on the other side. But I do also think it's true that, like, sometimes it's nice to slow down and walk, right?
Yeah. So do you have a specific deadline that you've given yourself to accomplish this goal?
The season for hiking the Ouachita Trail is generally fall and spring. I did not attempt this spring because tornadoes. It's just, like, one more thing I don't really want to think about when I'm out there. Also, there, it does tend to rain a lot in the spring in Arkansas, and I would rather not contend with rain when I'm trying to go fast. So I'm trying to give myself, like, every possible advantage here. So I'll be making another attempt in the fall. I started November 6th last year, and that was, felt pretty ideal. I think this year I'm going to head to Arkansas, like, mid to late October, just in case there's a really nice weather window at the end of October. And then I'm going to make multiple attempts if I need to. So I'm planning on kind of being out there for a bit. I always spend November in Arkansas anyway with my dad. So I'll just get there a little earlier than I normally would, make a first attempt as soon as the weather looks good. And if it doesn't go, then I should have enough time to make at least one more attempt. Last year I told myself if it didn't go that I was going to let it go. That didn't happen. Obviously that didn't happen. So I don't know if it doesn't go. You know, I also wasn't aware that the window to hike that trail kind of goes all through winter, and there were people out there in December, January, February, like, do through hiking. So there's a chance I could make another attempt in December if I needed to. It really depends on what is happening with my body physically after the first attempt, whether I'm gonna keep trying.
Okay, so how does that get recorded?
I am using a Garmin inReach, which sends pings. You can set it to different time intervals to send pings, and then it, like, Garmin records, you know, a history of you were here. For some of the more competitive trails for FKT, like Pacific Crest Trail, like Appalachian Trail, Arizona Trail is on the list, there are, like, more in-depth recording and proof requirements. But for a trail like the Ouachita Trail, which isn't very popular and doesn't have very many records on it, I think even the inReach is not necessary. They will take more, like, casual, like, trip report plus photos kind of proof. But I'll be using that to track it.
And who do you report that to?
Fastestknowntime.org. I always get this wrong. There's an official website. They keep the official lists.
Okay.
It was recently purchased, I think, by Outside. So they like own that now, but they're the official okay. record keepers.
Okay. I was just curious about that because I've, you know, many times read about, or even I've had two guests on the show who've done some Fastest Known Times, but it's like, okay, yes, but how does that actually work? I never asked anybody.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, now that you are taking on a very different type of adventure when you're trying to do this Fastest Known Time, let's do a new lightning round and see what that looks like for you.
Okay. I don't remember what the questions are from the lightning round.
Perfect. That's perfect. All right. So the lightning round, what's your favorite snack in your pack?
Ooh. I recently started eating Muir Energy, which is it's a gel type of thing, but it's more like a nut butter. And so it's like not just sugar. It also has fat in it, but it's based molasses and nut butter. So there's cashew lemon is my favorite flavor.
Ooh,
it's so good.
That sounds amazing.
So if you're not used to molasses, it's weird at first. but once you get past that, like, oh, molasses is a strange flavor, the cashew lemon is delicious. So good.
Okay. And I would assume that you're not actually doing this in boots. What kind of footwear are you using?
Oh, no, you froze. Is that me? Or
you did too for a second, but
okay,
we're back.
There you are.
Okay. So what kind of footwear do you like to use? I know you're probably not running in boots.
No. I am wearing Hoka Speed Goats right now.
What is your favorite sleep system? Do you use a tent when you're out doing this, or are you using a hammock?
Okay, this hasn't changed. I use a Nemo Hornet one person tent, so it's like pretty okay. super light, but still completely enclosed.
What's your favorite trail name that you've heard?
That I've heard?
That you've been introduced to somebody with this trail name?
Oh, I wish I could remember what I said last time. the first one that popped into my head was Mama Sunshine.
I think that might have been what you said last time, actually. Yeah, she's consistent on Mama Sunshine.
I love her.
That's great. And I think Mama Sunshine, did you say that suited her personality, or was
yes.
it ironic? I can't
yes,
remember.
Yes, it was very accurate, on point.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. So when you're on trail, especially when you're doing Fastest Known Time, do you like to listen to music or anything like that when you're really pushing yourself, or do you just need to focus and not have anything in your ears?
On my attempt, I actually had a bunch of friends record me messages. And then I had another friend stitch them all together into like an hour long audio file. And I hadn't heard any of them until I was on the trail. So I waited until I was like, my feet hurt and this sucks. And then I listened to an hour long like love fest of all of my friends saying,
oh my
like,
God,
saying like, we believe in you. You're so great. And then I had them. So I had them each record a voicemail essentially, and then also suggest a song. And so my friend who stitched it together put like their message and then the song they picked, and then a message and a song and a message and a song. And that,
wow, that's like the ultimate mixtape.
It was really good. Like really good.
Mixtape, yeah. For those of us who were born before 1990, and now would be just, you know, playlist.
Yes. So. Exactly.
That is such an awesome idea. I love that. What are you using for navigation? Do you use Far Out, or what do you have a favorite app?
I do use Far Out. That is the one, and the trails that I'm using that I'm doing are on there. So that's, I also buy the guidebook and like do some research, but I wasn't carrying the guidebook with me on that trail.
Okay. Well, last time we talked, you talked about how you have had a bad habit of not looking at your elevation the following day. Is that still your bad habit?
Uh-huh. I just don't, you know, what whatever it's going to be, it's going to be. I did look.
It's just a surprise.
I did look for the Ouachita Trail in terms of breaking up. I had to have a strategy about where I was going to camp. So I had looked ahead to see, like, you know, I was planning to do between 30 and 38 miles per day. And so I was looking to see, like, where the shelters were. And I did look a little bit at the elevation profile just to see, like, am I doing a lot of days that are kind of the same elevation, or are there a few days that are going to be like really brutal and then some days that are flatter? I wanted to see sort of how it was broken up. So I did more research on this than I have usually done on trails in the past.
What about caffeine? Do you take caffeine?
No. And actually, that is one of the things that messed me up on my attempt last year, was that I accidentally had caffeine not knowing it. And then I couldn't sleep. So
yeah,
I hiked 34 miles the first day. I set up my tent at 10:30 PM. I laid down, my eyes were peeled open. I laid awake for 4 hours, and then I got up. I got up and I kept hiking because I was like, I can't fall asleep.
Yeah.
So one of the things actually with POTS and dysautonomia is that caffeine affects me badly. I'm super sensitive to it. It takes a really long time to wear off. And I'm just like, it makes my heart go 1,000 beats a minute. So it makes me feel very anxious and very stressed. And it does that to everybody to a certain degree, but it's like extreme for me. And it's also extreme because I don't normally consume caffeine. So if I have it by accident, it's like a very unsettling experience.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. So after you're done with the Ouachita Trail, what's the next trail that you want to explore?
I just spent quite a lot of time over the winter in Arizona, and a lot of people I know hiked the Arizona Trail this year. So I'm definitely thinking about that. I have my hesitations about the water situation out there. But that's pretty high on my list. I also really would like to get out to Europe and do the Camino, which is a completely different type of trail experience, but I think it might be like a fun right. change of pace.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
What type of water filtration or water purification do you use?
I've been using a Sawyer since the AT. And I'm really happy with that system. I've also recently tried out the Katahdin Be Free bottle with like the built-in filter. Mm-hmm. And I like that as well. They have sort of different ideal use cases. But for people going out to thru-hike or to do like 3-4 day backpacking trips, like the Sawyer is reliable and it does a great job and it's lightweight and like it checks all the boxes. So that's kind of my go-to.
That's what we have too.
Mm-hmm.
We started out with this terrible heavy, it does have its usefulness, but we actually had like a ceramic
pump
filter. Yeah. That takes a lot of work. Okay, so speaking of filters, how are you becoming more unfiltered?
How am I becoming more unfiltered? This is such a hard question because I feel like I'm already, so like, how could I become more unfiltered?
Right.
I definitely but after my FKT attempt last year, I posted sort of just like my experience in reels. Like I was just like videoing along the way, like explaining what was going on. And that was probably one of the first times that I've shown like a video of me, like I am in distress. This is not fun. I'm like having a bad time. And I got a lot of interesting like response from that and people just saying like, I appreciate you showing what this really looks like, because a lot of times especially in the fastest known time world, people don't announce that they're going to attempt something until they've already done it. And so a lot of times we don't see people's failures on fastest known time attempts. And that was something I wanted to share. I wanted to share the experience, especially as someone who's like not an elite athlete. I was like, this is what it looks like for just like a regular-ish person to go make an attempt at something like this. Because I think there's a little bit of a movement in the FKT world right now to get more women to make attempts, because there are a ton of trails that don't have women's records on them. And I felt like showing my experience going out there and just being like, I'm just trying to set a record on a trail that doesn't have a record. And it's not going to be the fastest possible time. It's definitely not right. Like, and
just the fastest,
just the fastest one that anyone has recorded yet. I want to set a record that will be very beatable by lots of other people. And I wanted to share that experience, like from start to finish, from the time that I was like, I think I want to try this. I'm going to show you guys what it looks like throughout my training process. And then when I'm actually on the trail, like sort of what I went through. So I really tried to be as transparent as possible through that process.
Yeah. And that obviously is what grabbed my attention and spawned me to, or spurned me. It made me get back in touch with you. I can't think of the right word for it, but that was the catalyst that made me get back in touch with you to talk about why you are doing this. And especially because I have read your book and I have heard you talk in your own words about feeling like you're just like, you know, it's so hard. Why is this so hard? And other people just glide right past me. You know, it just really caught my attention that you were out there pushing yourself in this way. And I don't think I had that information about your health diagnosis or anything like that before. And that just makes it to me that much more interesting. So I wish you the best of luck and the happiest of trails and the hopefully this next attempt, like you're not going to have to keep attempting it 5 more times. My wish for you is that you only have to do this once and you make the record that you're hoping to make.
I hope so too. But I'm training very differently this year. I'm going about it like I learned a lot from my experience last year, and I am taking that information and applying it. So hopefully it won't take 5 more tries.
Yeah. And then you have the time and the energy to do something else that allows you to regain balance.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, thank you so much for coming back on the show. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and really I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. This was lovely.
Thank you again, Christine, for coming back on the show. We crack each other up and have a great time every time we talk. So I really appreciate that. So if you would like to follow Christine's fastest known time attempt, you can find her link to Instagram. It's probably the easiest way to follow that in the show notes. I'm also going to put a link in the show notes for her original episode if you wanted to go back and listen to the first time she was on the podcast when she was promoting Alone in Wonderland. Do you hike with your dog, or do you know somebody who hikes with their dog for longer distances? If you do, I would really love to talk with you or with your friend that does that, because I'd love to learn more about how we can make our hiking with our best friend more fun and practical and enjoyable for them as much as it is enjoyable for us. If you know somebody like that, please have them reach out, because I would really love to talk.
Thanks for joining me once again. If you are enjoying this podcast, or maybe it's even just the first time you've heard it, I would love to hear from you. You can reach out to me at hikingunfiltered@gmail.com. Tell me about your topic ideas, your guest suggestions, or maybe you would like to be a guest on the podcast. I love it if you gave me a shout out on your socials. You'll find links to my socials in the show notes. I am Hiking Unfiltered on Facebook and on Instagram. You can find me there, and I'd love to interact with you there. Can I ask you a favor? Please leave me a review, some stars, to help other people know that the podcast exists. Show them how to subscribe as well. You're going to find links in the show notes to the show sponsors that were mentioned. Go check them out. It does help support the show. That's it for this episode. Until next time, my trail family, happy trails.